Well, what has come perhaps upon us is that which Lucy of Charlie Brown fame says, the post-Christmas letdown. I know it hasn't come to Parkdale, but there's some people it might affect. But the folks here, we know it hasn't affected you. Because we are seeking in this season of Christmas to be about the real meaning, the real significance. And we do not want to fall victim to that other cartoon image of Dennis the Menace sitting amidst a vast array of gifts and empty boxes on Christmas Day. And the bubble that protrudes from his head says, is that all? Is that all? We know that when Christmas comes around, after all of the due preparations and even fun things like baking and so forth, but yet it takes work and time and all of the fastidious ways in which we want to make things on that night and that day just right, when it all comes to an end. Oh, that God would save us from the feeling, is that all? Because we would have missed the point. And so today we want to ponder just for a few moments on afterwards. What comes after? After the celebration, after the gift, after the recognition of this Christ, what comes afterwards? People have all kinds of ways of dealing with that. I was sharing with my family, as I do each Christmas at noon, the Carlton Tavern down the way has a Christmas dinner for those in the community who are lonely, who need a place to go. They have give out gifts and serve a free, wonderful, scrumptious meal. And I go each year to be one of the hosts, to look, search out in particular those who are lonely or troubled, to sit with them, listen to their stories and talk. And I was regaled by the tales of two persons in particular. I'm not going to name their names, but I just had to be smiling and laughing for much of the time as they ate their dinner. One gentleman was quite seasoned in what we might call the spirits of the season. And he was telling me about a tradition within his family that there was a rule that there would be no drinking until after the midnight mass. He was a Catholic tradition. There'd be no drinking in the family. But after the Christmas mass, they would go home and have a drink, or two, or three. And he said the trick was, because Mother was very strict about these rules, was to pump Mother with as many as possible and get her a little tipsy, and then she wouldn't know what was going on. That was their after Christmas celebration and tradition. One might think a very odd one. The other person that was sharing with me about Christmas and her reflections, a person who might be precariously housed, we could say, stops here and stays here and there with people she can find, but usually panhandles downtown and made her way to the tavern that day for a Christmas meal and conversation, and a wonderful, wonderful personality, great humor, great laughter, smiling with most of her teeth missing, but with a sense of joy that sparkled through her eyes. And she talked about what she observes each year around Christmas, that before Christmas, people seem to be happier. Their mood is lighter, and they give bigger amounts to her panhandling cup, and she likes that. But afterwards, she told me, they go back to being the way they are most of the year. They don't smile as much. And she considers, I thought this was quite clever, she considers her panhandling all through the year as a gift to people, to give them the opportunity to be generous, to remind them of those who are less fortunate. And she said she's willing to take the abuse when people hurl at her when they pass by and refuse to put anything in. She told me, I can take it. I can take it because maybe the next person they see who is asking, they might give something. reflections on before and after. What might ours be indeed? It's a wonderful poem that sets this within a larger historic figure, British poet Fanthrop. She was the first woman professor of poetry at Oxford University, and she wrote this poem called BC AD. This was the moment when before turned into after, and the future's uninvented timekeepers presented arms. This was the moment when nothing happened, only dull peace sprawled boringly over the earth. This was the moment when even energetic Romans could find nothing better to do than counting heads in remote provinces. And this was the moment when a few farm workers, a few shepherds, and three members of an obscure Persian sect walked haphazard by starlight straight into the kingdom of heaven. This is when before became after. And that is something that I want to share and reflect just for a few moments on, particularly the story that Omnike read from Luke's gospel. Simeon and Anna find themselves in the temple and they are confronting Mary and Joseph. According to Jewish tradition, 8 days after his birth, Jesus would have had to have been circumcised. That was the tradition. And then following that, 33 days later was to be the act of purification. And those within walking distance or had the capacity to travel to the temple would come and present the child that entered the purification, but also present the child. It is at such a moment, something that would be happening all the time as people gave birth and brought their children. And they encounter two people, or they are encountered by two, Simeon and Anna. Simeon, we're not told how old Simeon is. Most people assume that he's old, but we're not told exactly his age. We know that about Anna, but not Simeon. And Simeon is there. Simeon has been looking and waiting and longing, hoping. And this is something I think in the afterwards reflection of Christmas that is important for us to ask ourselves. What have we been hoping and longing for? For a long time. What is it that is worthwhile our pondering on the brink of a new year? What have you been waiting for, longing for? And then we ask ourselves, is that which we have been longing for and waiting for worthy and noble enough of our human spirit and of our Christian faith? Is it something worthy of the consumption of our mental energy and our activity and our lifestyle choices in order to pursue this thing? What is it that you and I are longing for, waiting for? See, the story tells us that Simeon was waiting for a long time. He was looking. He was on the lookout. And we're told that he was particularly attuned to when that moment would come because the Spirit was upon him. Oh, that I would be so sensitive to the Spirit. Simeon was prompted. And whenever you hear stories of the Spirit coming upon people, watch out. For not only will there be oddness, there will be controversy. And Simeon comes and he greets Mary and Joseph. Takes the child and begins to say all kinds of things, babble things about the child that no doubt might have bewildered Mary and Joseph. There's a very poignant scene in Zeffirelli's Jesus, his movie on Jesus, when in this particular scene, when Mary and Joseph come to the temple and Simeon takes the child and says these things about this child who's going to be great leader, but also be a source of division and strife. As Mary and Joseph walk away, they turn back and look at him with a puzzled look on their face. And I think that might have captured it just right. What is he saying? Can you imagine if this morning somebody stormed in from outside and came and wrested Thomas from your hands as we entered into the sacrament of baptism and started spouting things about this Thomas, about his potential, maybe being prime minister or maybe some sort of leader or discoverer of some cure for an incurable disease and all of these things. But there would be also some mysterious things. We might look askance at that person, wouldn't we? But Simeon knew what he believed and knew what he hoped for. He had more than eyes. He was what we would call a seer. Isn't it interesting how that word is composed? Seer is a seer, one who can see beyond the eyes. Someone once asked Helen Keller, "Can you imagine anything worse than not being able to see?" And she said, "Yes, having no vision." Vision and sight are different. Simeon had a vision of what God had intended. And this vision was the realization of the promise. You've heard our readings today going back from Genesis, that it has been in God's imagination and desire to see this creation reconciled in a harmonious relationship, not only with God, but in amongst itself, with humans and creation, creation and humans. That is God's dream for the redemption of that which has gone wrong. And all throughout the scriptures, through the prophetic literature and through the writings, it has been about how God has found ways, creative, imaginative ways, to bring people together and bring that message, unpopular, unbidden as it may be, in the lives of those preoccupied with their own doings, to bring that word of hope and promise. And here, Simeon, who knew well and was steeped in his Jewish tradition, knew well the promises. Here he sees in this child the promise realized, and he bears witness to that. We're told that you find what you're looking for. Is what you are hoping for and longing for consistent with that which God desires, not only for you, but for the world? That which you're spending your energy and your time and your money and your preoccupation for, that which you most want in your prayer life, will it have benefit not only for you, but for the world? Simeon knew how to recognize what other people did not. For that day, we can assume there were many other couples bringing their children, offering the sacrifice. They offered a poor one, Mary and Joseph. According to the law, a lamb and a dove was to be offered. But if you did not have the money, two doves could be offered. They offered two doves, which was called the poor one's offering. Others would have been making their offering. Why this child? Did Simeon perceive something different? Because he had vision. And we're told the Spirit had come upon him. The second character is a very important one. Anna, the prophetess, we're told something of her lineage. But this is what reminded me of this when I was pondering today's message and my friend at the Carlton Tavern, the woman, mostly homeless. You see, Anna, what does the Bible say? She spent all her time where? At the temple. In the court of women. It sounds as if she had no home. It sounds as if she pitched her tent, that she took up residence praying in the temple. That was her place of her abode. She was homeless other than the temple. Day and night praying, yearning, discerning, hoping. And she too comes independently of Simeon's witness and bears testimony to this child. This child whom she sees is not only for the people of Israel, the consolation of Israel, but for all those who were seeking things further. And she, the Bible tells us, goes out and spreads the news. She is the first preacher. Luke is very interesting. He begins with the absolute countercultural work of women. At the beginning of his gospel and at the end, for at Jesus' resurrection, the first to go and tell about it are the women. So something is signaled by this child. This afterwards is beginning to say the prejudices and the patriarchy of men over women, you need to call that into question. The desire and those who perceive that the favor of God was only upon the people of Israel, you have to call that into question. For Simeon says, for all the Gentiles as well, this Christ child's significance will bear fruit. Something has happened afterwards. It is an afterwards that invites you and invites me to ask the question, what are we longing for? is what we are longing for, something that will bless us and the world in the deep and most significant ways. How are we preparing for that which we're longing for? Are we positioning ourselves and our heart and our faith and our prayer and our ethics and our seeking of justice and our extension of compassion in such a way that we will recognize when it comes what God is bringing forth in and through us? And then, like Anna, will we not only challenge the status quo about where we ought to be and what we ought to say, but will we take the courageous step to spread that word? To spread the word to those who are looking. That's what the Bible says. She went and she shared this significance with those who were looking for the consolation in Jerusalem. There are people who are looking for spiritual fulfillment, for hope, for life, for purpose, for meaning. There are people who are looking for help. They can't find the words to say it, to express it. Take time to sit beside them, to look for them, and to share a word into their lives. For then, the before, the promises of God, will become the after, fulfilled through you and me in this world. Afterwards, what will be your Christmas afterwards? It goes on. Simeon and Anna give us a hint of how we can be. Thanks be to God. Amen.